Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 This morning we're going to read from Canto 2, Chapter 10. Follows chapter 9. Chapter 9 was answers, citing the Lord's version. And chapter 10 is Bhagavatam is the answer. There's 10 chapters in Canto 2. It's the final chapter. It's Maharaj Parikshit asking questions of Shukadeva Goswami. The questions were asked chapter 8, and he's continuing to answer his questions. Something's not good with this sound system. So, preceding text 46 was the answer to the process of creation and dissolution. Very technical. And now it's a summary. Here's the verse. Shukadeva Goswami speaking. This process of creation and annihilation, described in summary herein, is the regulative principle during the duration of Brahma's one day. It's his regular principle. It's what he does. It's his duty, his service. It is also the regular principle of the creation of Mahat, in which the material nature is dispersed. That was special sound effects for the dispersal of material nature. It's a nice long purport. Half of it is reference from Skanda Purana, where the subject matter is also same subject matter is covered. First paragraph. There are three different types of creation. Called Mahakalpa, Vikalpa, and Kalpa. In the Mahakalpa, the Lord assumes the first Purusha incarnation as Karanadakshai Vishnu with all the potencies of the Mahatattva and the 16 principles of creative matter and instruments. The creative instruments are 11. The ingredients are 5. And all of them are products of the Mahat, or materialistic ego. You with me? Or Prabhupada here? 11. And 5, the 5 gross elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether. And then the senses, the knowledge acquiring senses and the objects of the senses and the mind. 16. And they're within the Mahatattva. And when false ego mixes with the material, with pradhan, these 16 come out. these creations by the Lord in his feature of Karnadakshay Vishnu are called a Mahakalpa. Next, the creations of Brahma and the dispersion of the material ingredients are called Vikalpa. And the creation by Brahma in each day of his life is called the Kalpa. Yes? There's a partial devastation at the night, every night when Brahma goes to sleep. There's a partial devastation. The partial devastation is described, a very interesting description of it is in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, where up to Svargaloka and downward, there's a long drought, 100-year drought, no rain. Imagine, 1 year no rain, 2 years no rain, 3 years, 100 years no rain. So everything becomes like kindling. It can quickly ignite. There's a fire. And the lower Svargaloka down are scorched. Above, so it's Bhuloka, Bhuvarloka, Svargaloka. That's three in the upper seven. And above that, Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Satyaloka. That's four. So it's so hot that the residents of Maharloka get in their vimanas and they head upstairs. They go spend some time, and it's a lot of time because it's a night of Brahma. They spend some time with the residents of Tapaloka and even Janaloka. They go to Tapaloka. Maharloka, this is bonus because it's not in the Bhagavatam, but Maharloka, according to Brihat Bhagavatamrita, is a residence for souls that are in the Grihastha ashram, and they're not situated in pure devotion, but they're very attached to the Supreme Lord. They're so attached to the Supreme Lord that their thing, their service to him, is performance of yajna. And their devotion is so strong that when they perform yajna, he comes from the fire with his arms extended to receive whatever it is that they're offering into the fire. In the lower realms, fire yajna is also done. We might have a fire yajna during my visit here. And if there's a yajna, the Vedas say the fire is the tongue of Vishnu, and the tongue of Vishnu is receiving the offerings of the brahmanas, the ghee and the grain. Oblations are being offered into the fire, and the tongue of Vishnu is receiving. In Maharloka, he personally comes as long as they're performing the yajna, and he's extending his hands right from the fire. And the yajna is over and he disappears. And they get ready for the next yajna because they want that contact with the Lord. And they're grihasthas, they're married, but they're not at all attracted to the material pleasures of male-female association. And Tapaloka is a brahmachari ashram. It's The residents in Tapaloka are exclusively brahmachari and sannyasi. They're celibates, lifelong celibates in this realm may go to Tapaloka. And in Tapaloka, their thing, their service or assistance in serving Krishna is meditation. So they're big meditation fans. And residents in that realm include the Navayogendras. Those of you that have read Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 11 know about the Navayogendras, rishis that were the sons of Rishabdev that became Uttama Mahabhagavatas, great souls. They're examples of residence in Tapaloka, and the four Kumaras sometimes frequent Tapaloka. So during the partial devastation, that's what, everything is engulfed in flames, and what happens when things become engulfed in flames, it becomes ashes. Then after ashes, big rainfall, inundation. And what happens when there's rainfall and ashes? They dissolve. So like the flood, big flood. The whole lower part of the universe just becomes a big flood. So no rain, it's just the mixing of the elements. Very simple. I mean, you know, in principle it's simple. No rain, fire, lots of rain, lots of water. So everything is engulfed in water. And as the water subsides, then it's time for Brahma's next day. He does his morning sadhana. And then he does the kalpa. So the kalpa is sometimes synonymous with the day of Brahma. A kalpa is 1,000 yuga cycles. But there's something that Brahma does during that kalpa, and it's one of the types of creation. Vikalpa is what he does at the very beginning of his life. There's like not recreating things, nor is Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Satyaloka even existing. He's just a lotus on top of a lotus stem. So he has to do the whole thing. That's Vikalpa. And Mahakalpa is what Vishnu does. He glances over Pradhan and so forth, and the elements come into being. Therefore, each day of Brahma is called a kalpa, and there are 30 kalpas in terms of Brahma's days. So, you know, there's 30 days makes a month, and there's so many months, and then so many years, and that's it. The total dissolution. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 8:17 as follows. Sahasra-yuga-paryantam ahar-yad-brahmano-vidhu ratim-yuga-sahasrantam teho-rantra-vidho-janaha. In the upper planetary system, the duration of one complete day and night is equal to 1 year on this earth. This is accepted even by the modern scientist, Hare Krishna. Not exactly. And attested by the astronauts. Confirmed, the scientists were right. 1 day in the heavenly planets is equal to 1 year. There's relative time, is the point. 4 yugas are calculated in terms of the heavenly calendars. And accordingly, are 12,000 years in terms of heavenly planets. This is called the Divya Yuga. And 1,000 Divya Yugas makes one day of Brahma. The creation during the day of Brahma is called Kalpa. The creation of Brahma is called Vikalpa. When Vikalpas are made possible by the breathing of Mahavishnu, this is called Mahakalpa. There are regular and systematic cycles of these Mahakalpas, Vikalpas, and Kalpas. Chorus of crying children. We should have a special class for the children where they can go and cry. But if the children come and cry over here, it doesn't work well for the other class. It's perennial. It just doesn't change. They grow up and they become old enough to control themselves, and there's other ones. In answer to Maharaj Pariksit's question about them, Shukadeva Goswami answered, in the Prabhas Kanda of Skanda Purana. In Skanda Purana, Shukadeva Goswami is also instructing Maharaj Pariksit, and here's the 30 kalpas of Brahma. Would you like to hear the list of 30? Because they're here. 1. Shveta Kalpa. 2. Nila Lohita. 3. Vamana Dev. 4. Gantarta. Gatantara. Rorava. Prana. Brihat Kalpa. Kandarpa. Sandyota. Ishana, that's the first 10. Dhyana, Saraswata, Udana, Garuda, Kumara, Nisringha, Samadhi, Agneya, Vishnuja, and Sora, that's 20. Somakalpa, Bhavana, Supama, Vaikuntha, Archisha, Valikalpa, Viraja, Gauri Kalpa, Maheshwara, and Paitrik Kalpa, that's 30. These are Brahma's days only. And he has to live months and years, up to 100. So we can just imagine how many creations there are in kalpas only. Then again, there are vikalpas, which are generated by the breathing of Mahavishnu, so stated in Brahma Samhita, yasya. Yashyaika nishvichita makala matava lambya jivanti loma vilaja jagadandanata. The Brahmas live only during the breathing period of Mahavishnu, which means when he inhales, that's the end of Brahma. And then when he exhales, another Brahma. So the exhaling and inhaling of Vishnu are Mahakalpas, and all these are due to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for no one else is the master of all creations. Now, how is understanding all this going to help us be Krishna conscious? Or if we don't know all the names of these 30 days of Brahma, are we not going to go back to Godhead? Is there an exam, somebody standing at the gate of Vaikuntha that says, do you know the 30 days of Brahma? I'm sorry, you have to go back and take birth again. I was just listening yesterday to a lecture Srila Prabhupada was speaking about the poor fund of knowledge of the conditioned souls. The purpose of this human form of life is self-realization. But due to entanglement in matter, they don't have a clue of the purpose of life. The purpose of life is sense gratification. Just some impulse and acting on the impulse. And maybe not acting on some impulse because you're not supposed to act on certain impulses. So morality is a little higher than just acting on impulse. So be an animal or be a polished animal. That's all they know. Be an animal or be a polished animal. That the human form of life is meant for self-realization, that they do not know. And the information of the soul. Prabhupada was describing the travel to other planets, that the siddhas can do. And Prabhupada was describing yogis that do those same things that siddhas do. He said, I saw some, you know, yogi. It was in, I forget, some part of India. Some yogi, he gave the name, some 100 years ago in Allahabad or somewhere. And he was walking naked in the public street. So the police told him, you can't do this. It's a public street. And he just ignored them. And so they put him in jail. And then the next day, he was walking on the street naked. They got him, apprehend him again and put him in jail. And the next day, he's walking on the street naked. And then they apprehended him and put him in jail. And the third time, he's walking on the street naked. They gave up. Can you go to the forest instead of... Because he knew the mystic art and then he was describing flying. So like Durvas Muni could travel. Or Hanuman could travel. And, you know, yogis can travel. Even Ravana could travel without a craft. He knew how to do it. So many things, the fund of information of the conditioned soul is so poor, so paltry, because their mode of nature is so poor and paltry. The mode of ignorance is so strong that they're not capable of understanding refined things. You can give them refined things and they're not capable of understanding it. To understand about God, you're not capable. And so one of the first things in helping others to become Krishna conscious is come to the quality of goodness. And even that sometimes takes a little, you know, gentle coaxing to come to the quality of goodness. But there's no question of understanding higher spiritual knowledge without this quality of goodness. And in that realm of higher spiritual knowledge, once that quality of goodness is attained, so many subtle things, and these subtle things then become useful for serving Krishna. It's not just for flashing, here, look at this far-out knowledge. Look at all these kalpas and vikalpas and mahakalpas. Wow. And days of Brahman. Look at all these names. And boy, I got so much information. But it's how the universe works. And it's all happening according to the plan of the Lord. It's not an accident. It's all time in Vedic wisdom. Time is cyclical. And in these various cycles, it's very predictable. And one who knows the science, it's math. And by math and science, you can understand so many things are going to happen before they happen. Not exactly mystical. It's just subtle. And those who have the capacity can understand subtle things. There's signs that indicate something is about to happen. They know the science, and they can tune in to what's going to happen. And even if they can tune into what's going to happen, it doesn't mean it won't happen. Or they can, like Prabhupada was asked, is it okay for the devotees to consult an astrologer? Sometimes that might come out. Should we consult an astrologer? And Prabhupada's answer was, interesting answer. He said, if it's going to rain, you might take an umbrella. See the connection? The connection is, should we find out the weather forecast? It's like, should we ask an astrologer? What's coming? Today it's sunny. In the afternoon, is it going to rain? You ask someone that knows how to forecast the weather. And if you find out that it's going to rain, you might take an umbrella. You might not also. So if you consult an astrologer, it's not like you change your life. You may make some accommodation for something that's going to happen, but your focus doesn't change. Your focus is one thing, serving Krishna, and how to serve Krishna. You may take into consideration what an astrologer says. You may not also, on the strength of Krishna consciousness. In Lilamrita, and from my discussions with Hari Sori Prabhu, he described when Prabhupada's health was becoming bad, from time to time he would ask, to consult a qualified astrologer, and they were asking, how do we find a qualified astrologer? And some names were suggested, and so then Prabhupada approved, go ask so-and-so, and they would go ask so-and-so, and Prabhupada would study the thing, and then pay no attention to it. Again and again it happened. What I'm saying here is there's a subtle science, and to be able to read the subtleties of a subtle science, one has to be subtle. And, subtle to the point of being God conscious. Subtle to the point of being tuned into Supersoul, and Supersoul dictates. That's where knowledge comes from. Same place that forgetfulness comes from. And with all of this subtle knowledge, it's not like our Krishna consciousness is dependent upon understanding the subtle science. It's the other way around. Understanding the subtle science is dependent upon our Krishna consciousness. And if it has something to do with our service, like, for example, the devotees that are working on the planetarium project, it's their service. Could you imagine having the service of recreating in physical, three-dimensional, tangible, you can see it, touch it, smell it, hear it, in this plane, the description of the Bhagavatam of the structure of the universe and how it works. Wow. I mean, there's something for a PhD to spend a few lifetimes on. With a whole team of PhDs working with you. And when you're done, it's not just, you know, the happiness is we did it, but the happiness is appreciating how amazing Krishna is. He creates things that are easy to maintain because they're cyclical. It's real easy. I mean, it's intelligent. You make something that there's variety in the repetition, just like, you know, the seasons that repeat themselves. Each year there's a little variety. That's nice. But there's a pattern that repeats itself, having to do with the motion of the sun and the rotation of the earth and all the things that go on. And so there's seasons. In different parts of the world, there's different seasons. Some places there's four seasons, some places there's six seasons. There's variety. I was sharing with Abhiram 24 hours ago, I was in a place where it was snowing. Hey, there's variety. But there's patterns. And by knowing the patterns, one can, for example, one can prepare. Astronomy, by knowing the planetary configurations, the agriculturalist can be advised by the brahmana, now is a good time to plant your crops. And the harvest season will be a little later this year. And so on. Just, you know, by stellar or planetary influences. When to begin an undertaking? When is an inauspicious time to begin an undertaking? You know, beginning of some project, etc. So one's practical service unto Krishna can be considered according to auspiciousness. But then the higher plane is that transcendental life supersedes auspiciousness. Shubha shubha palaya evam mokshase karma bandhanai. From the platform of devotional service, one does not need to consider auspicious and inauspicious timings of things and even circumstances of things. We still want the quality of goodness. We want things to be maximum clean, for example. That's the quality of goodness. So whether is it this particular time or that particular time, we want things to be maximum clean because it's for Krishna. And when things are maximum clean for Krishna, we make offerings unto Krishna. We offer our life unto Krishna, not only at auspicious times. We make our offering of our lives unto Krishna at all times. The more one comes to the transcendental platform, the more these subtle sciences become known, and also the more these subtle sciences become less significant. For us, they're not so significant because we can't understand them. I'll explain what I mean. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, maybe you know this, maybe you don't know this, but his title, Saraswati, was given to him when he was still a teenager. Because as a teenager, he wrote a book on astrology, Vedic astrology and astronomy, that was so profound. It was recognized by the most learned astrologers of the time that this young man, he's the king. They were at his feet because he was so brilliant in the science of astrology and astronomy. And after some time, he just gave it up. Just like saying, you know, this isn't the means to reach Krishna. So his mastery was because of his subtle acumen. But because of that evolved subtle acumen, it's not something that, it was challenging to his intellect, but it wasn't satisfying to the heart. So why are those things in the Bhagavatam? And the answer is, it's part of the creation of the Supreme Lord. It's to show us that it's absolutely scientific. I'll share a little bit with some discussions I had with Sataputta. Sataputta Prabhu is now deceased, but when he was present, he was very, 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 very active in Bhaktivedanta Institute work, taking the message of the Vedas and presenting it, or having dialogue with the scientific world in such a way the scientific world would earn respect for the Vedas and become compelled to study the Vedas and revere the Vedas, when instead of just dismissing because it has to do with just this belief system of some weak-minded people, sentimental people, as is common to think about religious people among scientists. So one of the things that he was explaining to me is the Christians who would go here and there advocating creationism, when they got into academic circles, they were embarrassed by the tough, hard questions that the scientific community were asking, because they didn't have answers. Their idea is, like in the Bible, the creation is, and the first day God said, let there be light, and so there was light, boom. And the next day he said, let there be something else, and there was something else. And they were asked, do you take that literally? And they say, yes. And then, so then they say, here's this information, here's this information, here's this information, here's this information, here's this information. Hold it up to your idea, and it doesn't match. So they got laughed off the stage in academia. So the approach of the Vedas is so rigorous that the heads of the scientists spin to understand it. And our purpose is not to have our heads spin also. Our purpose is to recognize that everything in fact comes from God, and here's how it happens. Here's how it actually happens. These various kalpas. That's why there's interest within the Bhagavatam on these subject matters, because it comes from Krishna. It's something he does. And whatever Krishna does is of interest to the devotee of Krishna. And because we're in this world, how this world comes into being is relevant. Although we may not understand it because our consciousness is not subtle enough. Here is a science by which the measure of how the Lord creates is set out. And it's not only one time in the Bhagavatam, it's several times in the Bhagavatam. It's laid out step by step, because it's one of the 10 topics, Sarga and Visarga, or here, Mahakalpa and Vikalpa, Vikalpa and Kalpa. The creation and the subcreation. These are two of the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam. And once again, why are they topics of the Bhagavatam? Because it's something the Lord does. It's relevant to the devotee of the Lord because the Lord does it. It's relevant also because we're in this place. It's like the discussion last night. If we don't understand how we got into where we are, how are we going to get out? Where's the doorway? Where's the way out? We're in this material creation. How does the material creation come into being? You know, there's the door, but somebody has the key. The door is locked, even if you know where the door is. And it takes a quality, as Prabhupada was saying in this lecture, the Lord is the supreme good. If we don't come to the platform of goodness, how are we going to be in the company of the supreme good? How are we going to get on the other side of the door where it's supreme good? And over here, it's ignorance and passion. We have to qualify ourselves. And then, in a moment, he can release us, if he so desires. Or can he continue to engage us in some service, as he desires. And we're fine with that, as long as we can serve him. Okay. Very lively place around here. Children crying and yagyas going and mosques singing. And so any comments? Questions? Yes? They're present in Maharloka, excuse me, in Tapaloka. Generally, to go to Vaikuntha requires pure bhakti. So they're developing in a gradual way, but they're attracted to other things than, you know. The fortune, one of the great fortunes that we have is those who are guiding us, or the acharyas of our disciplic succession, are directly taking us to bhakti, shuddha bhakti, right away. So we're not first taught hatha yoga and pranayama and so on and so on, and so that we can do some nice meditation and become meditation fans. So it's possible from meditation to go into the realm of bhakti. But we're just taken right to the bhakti. And with that, we are to develop the qualification to enter into Vaikuntha, pure devotion, not mixed devotion, pure devotion. That's the teaching, and we're to cultivate that teaching. And those that are in Tapaloka, they may, Krishna recognizes their attraction, and so he gives them the facility for their attraction, but also there's devotion. And so some association is also provided. Specifically, that's what the Kumaras say. When Gopakumar gets to Vaikuntha, he sees the four Kumaras in Vaikuntha and says, "Hey, I saw you in Tapaloka." They said, "Yeah, we were going there to give them some association." They were on Sankirtan, giving them some association. through association, one can go to higher stages. So we're way down here. We're not further down, but we're way down. And the essence is to develop pure devotion. So we may, and the residents of Tapaloka may, in their next life, go to Vaikuntha Loka, provided pure devotion is attained. And that's how they take the association that they receive. Yeah, and same for us. Anything else? Yes. Where does? Where in the planetary systems are the Gandharvas and so forth? I'm not certain of that. My understanding is in the Swargaloka region. They assist, or they're like, they have a certain service in relation to the controlling demigods. So it's in that region. So it's not Indraloka and Chandraloka and so forth, but it's in that region. What about Janaloka? There's not... Brihad Bhagavatamrita doesn't give much information. It speaks specifically about Maharaloka and Tapaloka and mentions that Janaloka is in between. Doesn't say much about it. There's a lot said about those other two. Because the other two, Gopa Kumar goes there and it describes the place. He goes to Brahmaloka too. Expanded in further cantos. Exactly.
Unless we actually deeply understand first canto, we won't be able to access this.
No, that's not so. It's not like that. Unless you're pure, you won't be able to understand anything. And it's like, let's say you're a school teacher. And you have some students in your class. And you teach them certain principles. You'd like them to make sure at least they understand certain principles. Okay. You give them an exam. They get A's in their exam. They understand the principles. Now here's how you apply this principle. We'll drill down a little bit. And here's some more about this principle and its application. Then over there, we'll drill over there. And there's something more about this principle and its application. How does this compare to this, and how does it work with the principle? You just go more deeply in the subject because they got the principle. But then as they go to the application and the application, they'll understand the principle better. They can go back to the first canto and understand, oh, that's what it was saying. The essence is in the first canto. First two cantos, Prabhupada also said. First two cantos. But first canto. For that matter, it's in the Chaturslokhi verses. Just learn the Chaturslokhi verses. Everything's there. It's all in the Maha Mantra. Just chant Hare Krishna. Just learn that Maha Mantra. Anything else over here? We're doing what together?
What together?
Services together. We're doing services together. Good. That's good. Yeah. Why is that? Well, One of the things to avoid is doership. Because the flip side of the doership is, oh, we didn't do it well. And so we have to become better doers in doership. That's something to avoid in when things don't go well. At the same time, avoiding doership, we want to carefully consider what went wrong, how it could be done better. And that's, you know, that let the exercise be a devotional one instead of a doership one is what I'm saying. The more we consider that Krishna should be pleased, Guru and Krishna should be pleased, the more Krishna will give us the intelligence how to make a good plan and the steadfastness to execute the plan. Even when things start going different than planned. And my thoughts are going to a yatra in Vrindavan, where we had, you know, a certain plan. And you know what happens in Vrindavan. It never happens according to plan. And the person that had made the plan was going crazy. You know, because the bus drivers just decided to do what they wanted to do, and they wanted to go get gas because they needed gas. And then some said, oh, I don't need gas, so they just went to the place. And you know, what about prasad? You know, it just started going unraveling. The whole plan started unraveling. No matter how much you prepare, sometimes plans don't unfold the way that you plan them. Then you have to be prepared to be attached to pleasing Krishna and receiving intelligence from Krishna how to adjust to the circumstance that unfolds. So the focus is pleasing Krishna. And if that focus is maintained, Krishna is pleased. And as the group learns to keep that focus, then, you know, the harmony and synergy works better, both according to the plan and according to the changes of circumstance that weren't predicted. So at the top of the pyramid of evaluating how things went and how to make it better is how much Krishna conscious are we? How much is that at the forethought? Is it, I want to execute a nice festival or a nice function or a nice something and get the satisfaction for having done that? Or is it that I want Krishna to be pleased? It's, in one sense, it's subtle, but in another sense, it's the difference between the spiritual world and the material world. And here's something I was hearing Srila Prabhupada say just this morning. For to engage in devotional service, one doesn't need to go out and learn something. He kept repeating it. He said, whatever your position, take that and try to serve Krishna sincerely. And Krishna will instruct you. By practice over time, the service will improve. Because if, provided the seed behind the service is sincere desire to please Krishna, the service will improve. So as we as a community work together, focusing on trying to please Krishna, Krishna will be our instructor. You get the idea. And then there's always new people coming, so those new people need examples, role models. And the most important thing of the role model is not to over-instruct the person about how to do something, but to set the right mood. Details are fine, but too many details can be like, you know, micromanaging the person to the point where, you know, their enthusiasm is quashed. We don't want that. We want their enthusiasm. And then this enthusiasm can be refined through practicing doing something in devotion. One of the earliest artists asked Srila Prabhupada, I'll skip the person's name, and they said, Srila Prabhupada, my painting is very crude. I've never really had any art training. Should I go take some art classes? And Prabhupada said, no, don't take art classes. Lord Brahma has designed this body in such a way that you just paint with devotion and your painting will become wonderful. By practice. In devotion. So there's the key. It doesn't mean, okay, we don't have to pay attention to any details. But the attention to details is in the spirit of devotion. And then you assess what went well, what didn't go so well, how could it be done better? Yes. My attention is half drawn by the screaming child, and I'm not, and your voice is soft, and their voice is shrill. Cycles. Then I lost it. Lord Krishna makes the creation in cycles. Well, I not because it is, but it is. Yeah, sure. But, you know, Krishna is the supreme goodness. But it's not so that he can take it easy. But it's a symptom of goodness. Something that's good for you, you should do regularly. And when you do it regularly, it helps increase the quality of goodness. It's like, you know, if something is good for you, it increases, do it regularly, it increases the quality of goodness. And in that quality of goodness, it's not, the essence is not that you do it regularly, the essence is that you do it for Krishna. But by doing something regularly, it can bring you to goodness that makes it easier to think of doing something for Krishna. Is that all right? You have something particular in mind? Yeah, Mangal Aarti every morning. Etc. And, you know, a number of you have some duties, and you do those duties after Mangal Aarti in a regular way. And that's nice. And so it's that it promotes the quality of goodness, and through that goodness it gives the entryway into transcendence. The real value is the transcendence, is to do it for Krishna. All right? Something else. Yes. Is it possible to be extremely attached to the Lord and not being pure. Is that something that you want to do? Well, how about Kamsa? He wasn't favorably attached, but he was always thinking of Krishna. So he was attached to Krishna in the manner of always thinking of Krishna. Shishupal. He was attached to Krishna in hatred or in fear. Kamsa. So is that satisfy? No, but otherwise the question is, what's the utility of the question? It's a theoretical question that I don't understand the utility of it.
When somebody is favorably attached, when somebody is extremely favorably attached, it seems like automatically that's what the Lord wants. We don't do the other things.
Okay. And so? I'm not sure what you're getting at. You know, you have a person in mind, like an example of this in mind. You're just trying to understand the principle of attachment to be. It's like, you know, an object is over here and the sun is over here. The object that's attached to the sun becomes like the sun. It's fire. So to be attached to the Supreme Lord, who is the Supreme Pure, one becomes pure. Otherwise, there's no meaning to say being completely attached to the Supreme Lord. There's no meaning. So they're inextricable. If that answers your question, the answer is you can't have one without the other. And therefore, I'm not sure why you're asking the question. But they're also attached to the activity, and they have a philosophy. It's described. Okay, now I get why you're asking your question. They derive in Maharloka. They derive some happiness in making offerings because the Supreme Lord comes. But it's not the same as pure devotion. Whether the Supreme Lord comes, doesn't come. Making offerings to Him, that's pure devotion. So the Lord recognizes, they get some happiness, they have some attachment for me, so He comes. And then they finish their yoga and He goes away. It's not the spiritual world. It's not Vaikuntha. So then, similarly, the question was asked, do those persons, Maharloka, Tapaloka, after this life, do they go to the spiritual world? It depends on how they take advantage of the association of those who teach them pure devotion. Because after Gopakumar, I mean, he was in Maharloka, and they were saying, come on, you're looking for Madan Gopal, just do yajna, and Madan Gopal will come. Or went to Tapaloka, just do meditation. Why are you looking for Madan Gopal? Just sit down and meditate. He's right there. And then they give this philosophical argument. Pippalayana Rishi gives the argument that says, it's a meditator's argument, that says, when they're seeing, in any case, it happens first in the mind. They have this whole rationale. It's like, you know, many verses.
explaining. Seeing first happens in the mind. We're sitting here and for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours at a stretch, we're seeing the Lord within the mind. So come and meditate with us. So he gets into meditation. But it's not the same. He's not satisfied. Because he has this seed of pure bhakti that he received long, long before. So then when he gets to beyond the coverings of the material world, the Vaikuntha Vasis are coming down into the material world to give their association, and they say, we know that you had this conversation with the Tapaloka people, and they were trying to convince you about meditation. We're really happy that you didn't buy into their argument, because here is what real seeing the Lord is. It's with the senses. You know, Rishikesha, Rishikena, Sevanam. And so it's not just in the mind. It's purified senses that come about through devotional service. So they're not at the stage of Shuddha Bhakti, but they have an attachment for the Lord. So is there purity? It's almost complete, but not complete. Their understanding is not complete. And to get that understanding, they need the right association. I was at a place where I was invited as a speaker at a yoga studio, and the students were all like seasoned hatha yoga students. And my assignment was to explain to them the relationship between hatha yoga and bhakti yoga. So I went through that. And then at the end they wanted to know, what's your experience? Do you practice hatha yoga along with bhakti yoga? Because I was saying, you just add, you know, do your hatha yoga and add bhakti. It, you know, before you begin, chant the mantra. And when you end, chant the whole explanation. So they say, do you do that? Do you do hatha yoga? And the answer I gave them was, my entry was not down here. My entry was right here. So I don't do hatha yoga. And your entry is here. So you do hatha yoga and you do your bhakti yoga. And the yoga teacher is right in front of me. She doesn't want to lose her students. It's her livelihood. And the whole staff, you know, how is he going to answer this question? I said, I know some of my associates. They do also hatha yoga. And it helps them do their bhakti. And I know some people like you, that, you know, they add bhakti to their hatha yoga. And I don't do hatha yoga. I do some stretching. You know, and it's good to be healthy. But that's not the, you know, that's not how I was trained. So a lot depends on where your entry is. But you don't, you know, this is what you need. And, you know, don't be artificial. Get to where you want to go in steps. And maybe in time you'll continue. Maybe in time you won't. We don't find descriptions that the Vrijavasis, they're doing hatha yoga. Or, you know, like the, you know, Tapaloka residents are doing meditation. The gopis said, you know, Krishna, Dhyan yoga, Gyan yoga. We just are attached to you. Please stop. Don't tease us this way. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada.